Hey guys, welcome to the assignment explanation audio for Chapter 2. I hope you've gone through all of the above and have also completed the assignments that we will be going over. Let's go ahead and get started with part number 1. All right, part 1 says list and discuss the 3 main parts that make up a neuron. All right, so a neuron is going to be the basically the active unit of the nervous system. And it's composed of 3 specific parts, which on page 19, it shows you that it is made up of the cell body, axon, and dendrites. All right, so that's all. Nice and easy for part 1. Part 2, it says list the 5 main functions of the skeletal system. How does the skeletal system allow for movement? What system acts to move the skeletal system by attaching to bones? So on page 24, it kind of goes over all this, especially the main functions. So the 5 main functions are going to be support, as in like posture, bone structure more or less, protection, like the rib cage and the skull protect vital organs, allowing for movement, meaning the bones have joints which allow you to move, blood cell production, which actually happens in the center of the long bones, and then also mineral storage, such as phosphates and calcium. All right, next it says, how does the skeletal system allow for movement? The skeletal system basically allows movement by bones linking together to create joints. Joints are a part of the skeletal system, we'll call it. And then the muscular system is the one that acts to move the skeletal system by connecting to the bones via tendons. All right, so that's part 2. Let's go over to part 3. It says, define arthrokinematics, and then also under joints, note that the 3 major motion types are rolling, spinning, and sliding. And then list the real-world examples of the roll, spin, slide from the book. So this is all found on page 33 of your textbook. And it says arthrokinematics is defined as joint motion. The way we discuss that is going to be arthro means joint, and kinematics basically just refers to movement. All right, so rolling motion in the real world would be something like the knee joint and the femoral and tibial condyles rolling across each other during knee flexion and extension or a squat. A sliding motion is going to be like the shoulder blades sliding across the rib cage during protraction, retraction, or elevation and depression. And then a spinning movement is going to be, the main one in the body is going to be the radius as it rotates on the humerus when you pronate and supinate your hand or that radial ulnar joint, yeah. All right, so that's part 3. Let's go over to part 4. It says, list and describe the 3 layers of connective tissue within the muscle, and what is the innermost layer? So the 3 main, the 3 layers of connective tissue with the muscle are going to be the epimysium, E-P-I-M-Y-S-I-U-M. Don't know why I spelled it out, but it's fun. Epimysium is going to be the outermost layer of connective tissue. Then we have the paramecium, which is going to be the middle layer of connective tissue, and that's the one that specifically surrounds muscle fascicles. That sometimes is asked on the test, which layer of connective tissue surrounds muscle fascicles, so know that that's the paramecium. And then endomecium is going to be the innermost layer of muscle connective tissue, which is the second part of that part 4 question. So, endomecium is the innermost layer. All right, now let's move to part 5. It says, describe the process of initiating a muscular contraction and ending a muscular contraction. So that's on page 44 in that table or in that chart, or that picture, I guess I should say, they related to something on there. But let's go ahead and look at the chart on page 44. So initiating a muscular contraction, the steps include, and the first step is going to be the most important, guys, acetylcholine is released and it binds to the receptor. So it's ACH or acetylcholine is the whole point of asking this question. And that is basically to let you know that acetylcholine stimulates the process or starts the process of initiating a muscular contraction, acetylcholine. Step 2, an action potential reaches the T-tubule. Step 3, sarcoplasmic reticulum releases calcium, which exposes the cross bridges for binding and a contraction begins. Ending a muscular contraction basically is the ACH is removed, and then all those things just reverse. So the sarcoplasmic reticulum gathers back the calcium. There's no more cross-bridge binding sites available, so you can't contract anymore. There's no binding, we'll say. And then contractions ends, which means the muscle is relaxed. So that's on page 44. Let's go ahead and move over to part number 6. It says, discuss the difference between type 1 and type 2 muscle fibers. Which type is used for endurance activities and has better oxygen delivery system? Alright, so page 45 is where this is found in that table. It says type 1 is going to be known as slow twitch muscle fibers. They have better oxygen delivery or increased oxygen delivery, so that's the second part of this question. They're smaller, but they do have less force generation, meaning they're not as strong, but they can contract for long periods of time, so they're great for endurance. The slow twitch fibers are commonly found in like your postural muscles that allow you to sit upright, and they're also slow to fatigue, meaning they're great for endurance. Type 2 is going to be fast twitch, meaning decreased oxygen delivery, but they're larger and have way more force, way more power. Way more force generation, but they're not. They don't last that long. I mean, it's short-term contractions, and they fatigue really quick. Meaning that you can't, sprint for minutes on end. You typically have to slow down because those fast twitch fibers, which produce a really fast sprint or like heavier lifting, we'll say, are going to fatigue faster. All right. Next, we have part 7. It says, describe the differences and similarities between the following mechanoreceptors, which is the Golgi tendon organ and the muscle spindles. They always throw a question or two on the test about these two mechanoreceptors because they're basically associated with proprioception and protect your muscle in various ways. But on page 22, the Golgi tendon organ is located in the in the tendons of each muscle, and they're going to sense a change in muscular tension or the rate of tension change. Okay, so basically when you lift up a dumbbell and you feel the weight of that dumbbell and you get a sense of how heavy something is, that is going to be the Golgi tendon organ telling you about how heavy that is. The muscle spindles are going to be located in the muscle itself, and they're going to sense a change in muscular length or the rate of muscular length change. So basically when you feel a stretch of your muscles, like when you're actually just going to stretch, like stretching your hamstrings or something, that feeling of that pull actually comes from the muscle spindles. And they're actually there to protect you to make sure that you don't overstretch a muscle and tear it. So that's why if you don't stretch very often, the muscle spindles become, we'll say, very sensitive, and you become what feels like less flexible. But actually, it's just a matter of turning the muscle spindles off to allow for a little bit more flexibility, which can be done through static stretching and foam rolling, that sort of thing. So fun facts with Eddie right there. All right, part number 8, last part of this chapter 2, says list the agonist, synergist, stabilizer, and antagonist for the chest press, overhead press, row, and squat exercises. All right, so that is going to be found right there on page 46, and a nice little table for you. We've organized that in a specific way, so we'll just go over the agonist for the chest press. Let's go over the chest press first. The agonist is the pectoralis major. Synergist would be the triceps or the anterior deltoid. Those are helpers. Stabilizer is going to be the rotator cuff because it's stabilizing the shoulder. Antagonist is going to be the posterior deltoid because that does the opposite motion of the agonist. Overhead press, that's like a shoulder press, is going to be the deltoid muscles, the agonist. Synergist is the triceps. Rotator cuff is the stabilizer, with the lats being the antagonist because they do the opposite of shoulder abduction. The lats do shoulder adduction. The row, latissimus dorsi, is your prime mover or your agonist. Synergist is going to be biceps and maybe the posterior deltoid. Rotator cuff, once again, is a stabilizer. Guys always know the rotator cuff is a stabilizer. Then you have the pec major is going to be the antagonist because that does the opposite of a row. Or basically does the press, the chest press. All right, and then the squat, the agonist is going to be the quads and the glutes, gluteus maximus, quadriceps. Hamstrings is going to be a synergist because they also assist in hip extension slightly. And then the deep core muscles or the transverse abdominis is going to be your stabilizer. And the core is always going to be a stabilizer with any lower body exercises. And then the hip flexors or the psoas, iliopsoas, you may hear it, is going to be the antagonist because they do the opposite of the gluteus maximus's work. All right, guys, so that's going to be it for the audio for chapter 2. Make sure you complete the quiz below, score well on that. Also, guys, make sure you have written down the answers from the assignments because we want to make sure that we make a nice little study guide for ourselves to look over before we test. All right. Yeah. I look forward to seeing you in the next lecture, chapter 3. Cheers.